The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The president's strategic foreign policy initiative on Iran again gets tested by Iran.
Well, the Iranians are lashing out in order to blackmail the international community.
Powerful Nike Corporation caves to former NFL bad boy Colin Kaepernick, pulling a sneaker line out of distribution.
What's going on here is a form of repression.
My friend and colleague Dennis Prager testifies before the Senate Judiciary Committee on bias from YouTube and Google.
I feel like I'm in a Monty Python skit here.
And our State Department hosts its second international ministerial on religious liberty.
Not only did they talk about it in our Declaration of Independence, right? We talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I am Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more from HughHewitt.com, and let me invite you to join me now by video. Follow me as well on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. First, it was a British oil tanker under attack by Iranian gunboats, only to be rebuffed by a British frigate. Then on Wednesday, it was reported that a United Arab Emirates tanker had disappeared, again believed to be the work of Iranians. In the very recent past, say in the Obama years, such acts may have been successful in intimidating the U.S. and its allies, but now Iran will likely feel more pain. President Trump has shown himself unlikely to shrink back in response to the mullah's antagonisms, much different from the former administration responses. It was still unclear what had actually occurred when I spoke with my Congressional Armed Forces expert, Wisconsin representative and former Marine intelligence officer Mike Gallagher. We have got a United Arab Emirates tanker has disappeared in the Straits of Hormuz, believed to have been captured, boarded by, not sunk, Iranians. We also have Houthi drones, which are made in Iran, targeting Aba and Jizan airports in Saudi Arabia. You're on armed services. What ought we to do about this, Congressman Gallagher?
Well, the Iranians are clearly finding themselves increasingly isolated. They're lashing out in order to blackmail the international community. So the most important thing we need to do in concert with our allies is to stay the course of maximum pressure. I think the situation with the British ship, the HMS Montrose, which is the frigate that was escorting the British tanker in the Iranian Gulf when the Iranians were threatening to grab it, also highlights the importance of having frigates, having small ships that can escort these tankers. And this is also why I think what Army Secretary and SecDef nominee Mark Esper said, he outlined how the administration intends to continue to pursue a 20-nation maritime coalition that would ramp up surveillance and aim to, quote, foreclose the opportunity for any miscalculation or misunderstanding in the Straits of Hormuz or the Gulf of Oman, providing escorts and sentries to vulnerable vessels. My point is that the United States, in concert with our allies, we have the naval assets available in order to control the situation. And I think add on to that the fact that we need to continue to impose greater economic pressure, ending the waivers that are still in place. People don't understand that the State Department has never actually ended Obama's horrible Iran nuclear deal. They still have sanctions waivers going to keep the old nuclear deal cooperation projects alive. These waivers should end. I think that multi-pronged approach and just keeping calm and carrying on with maximum pressure will allow us to succeed in the end.
At some point, though, are they not trying to provoke a conflict?
They are very skilled in working through proxies, but at the end of the day, the United States, in concert with our allies, holds all the economic and certainly the military cards in this equation. I don't mean that to blithely say we should find ourselves going further up the escalation ladder. I just think that we need to have the confidence to respond to Iranian aggression because what we've seen in the last 8 years is that allowing them to ramp up their aggression just further invites chaos.
Now, the United Arab Emirates is one of our strongest allies in the Gulf and in the Gulf Council and in various other regional bodies. They've got a ship missing. Should we go get their tanker back for them? We know where the ship is, right?
Hugh, I honestly do not know the details. I've yet to talk to anyone in the military or in the intelligence community, but certainly I believe we should stand firmly with our allies. The UAE, which is often referred to as Little Sparta in the region, is one of our best and most capable allies in the region. But again, this gets to the question of having the appropriate naval and military assets in the region in order to help our allies, because this crisis illustrates how important they are.
On the domestic front, more of our institutions are being brought to their proverbial knees by pressure campaigns from the left. This time, Nike Corporation has been humbled by former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick, whose meteoric rise and fall was predictable with the 49ers, later became a symbol and a rallying point for the hard left. Nike later renewed Kaepernick by choosing him as one of its spokespersons. But a new shoe line, embossed with the classic Betsy Ross flag, brought tension. Kaepernick wasn't happy with it. To him, the Betsy Ross flag symbolized the slavery era. So Nike immediately discounted the shoe line. Dennis Prager spoke with Daniel Henninger of the Wall Street Journal about his commentary on Nike's bow to correctness.
I detect a deep annoyance, if not anger. Here's a line from his column. The Betsy Ross flag incident suggests something is happening that is not ridiculous. It's insidious. Pulling this flag because it is now regarded as a slavery flag. And he mentions Kate Smith, the Philadelphia Flyers, took down the statue of her because she once sang a racist song in the 1930s. I pretty much memorized your column, Dan.
Well, it's I had to get a few things off my chest there, Dennis, for sure. Thing that Nike did with the Betsy Ross flag was just kind of the last straw in a world of many last straws, to be sure. But what struck me about all this, Dennis, is that these things keep happening, but what's especially with the Nike is how easily they happen, how easily the people in positions of leadership, whether at the Yankees, the Philadelphia Flyers, or Nike, when they get leaned on by someone like Colin Kaepernick, they just fall over. Like I said, like empty plastic bottles rolling down the street. I mean, Nike had created this shoe with the Betsy Ross flag embossed very small on the back of the shoe. And he complains to them that, you know, Betsy Ross coexisted in the United States when slavery was around. And so Nike, almost instantaneously, I mean, you wondered whether there was any internal discussion inside the corporation at all about whether they should pull this thing or not. They just decided Collins complained, it has to go, and they pulled the shoe out of distribution. And I think that's insidious when the left is able to use such a degree of moral intimidation. These are institutions that represent something in American life. When they just fold over in the face of this kind of pressure from the left understands that. And I think what's going on here is a form of repression. It's kind of like the thought police. And I, you know, thinking about writing this piece, Dennis, it occurred to me that the left, the radical left in the United States, which has gotten hold of the Democratic Party, they want people to submit. This is a form of submission, and they keep doing it over and over again to force a sort of an act of obedience, which struck me as an almost Mao-like phenomenon in American life. And it's very sad. The thought has been running through my mind for some time that what the American left has been doing lately, it reminds me of what happened in the mid-1960s for about 10 years in China under Mao Zedong. It was called the Cultural Revolution. And the Cultural Revolution's purpose was to impose Mao Zedong thought on the Chinese people, and he enlisted cadres of young people called the Red Guard who traveled around the country seeking out people who simply were in disagreement with Mao and Mao thought, and arresting them and sending them out into the countryside. They had public confessions, struggle sessions, where people would have to stand up and confess their heresies. And God knows I'm not saying that the United States is communist China, but something similar in terms of thought control, I think, is going on now among the American left. And this is obviously an overreaction. I mean, we could agree that one should be aware of these sorts of things happened in the American past, but then to erase these individuals from our history like this strikes me as Mao-like. There's no other way to put it.
Meanwhile, this past Tuesday saw my Salem colleague Dennis Prager performing in a different setting. A subcommittee of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, the Subcommittee on the Constitution, which is investigating censorship on big tech, namely Google-owned YouTube, invited Dennis Prager to testify. Prager University, an enormously popular online educational site founded by Dennis, has sued YouTube, claiming that they have censored many of PragerU's videos. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee was one of Dennis' questioners.
Mr. Prager, I have been to your website, know your work, and I share your frustration with Google and YouTube, and I feel for you in sharing your frustration. As you probably know, I have borne the worst of Google's culture. One of their senior engineers actually singled me out for my political views and then doubled down on that. And then Google came along and refused to put up an ad from the Tennessee Republican Party in support of my campaign. So is there bias? Yes. Have I experienced firsthand? Yes. How did Google and YouTube censorship harm your ability to communicate your message online?
If no school can see it, by definition, if it's on the restricted list, if no library can show it, that's a very serious restriction, especially given that our target audience is young people. So they're depriving us of the very people that we most want to touch with our message. So that's pretty dramatic. And actually, it's almost unbelievable, because if you look at the list, the Ten Commandments being a perfect example, well, what I finally found out today, we all heard the representative of Google told us why the Ten Commandments video was taken down, because it contains murder. So, as I said, we have a solution. We'll put up one without thou shalt not murder in it. But that's so absurd as to be hilarious. This will be something I will replay on my radio show for years. That is the level of absurdity. I feel like I'm in a Monty Python skit here when he says something like that. The only possible explanation for all of this is they don't like PragerU, because we're a very, very influential conservative voice touching a lot of lives. There is no other explanation.
Find the complete Dennis Prager testimony at townhallreview.com. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
Not only do they talk about it in our Declaration of Independence, right? We talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Establishing a commission on unalienable rights. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. The U.S. Department of State has been busy. Additionally, in the past few months, it's been on a mission. Led by former Congressman, former head of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, this crucial and worldwide face of the administration is showing leadership not seen for many years. This past week saw a hugely important State Department gathering that has occurred for the second year in a row. It's called a ministerial, and it has attracted over 1,000 leaders from around the world from more than 114 countries to develop and sign a statement on unalienable rights. My colleague Sebastian Gorka spoke with Secretary Pompeo on his America First radio show.
You had an amazing initiative this week with regards to unalienable rights. I want to talk about that. But for a moment, can you take us into the truly historic events where you were with the president the first time that an American president since 1953 stepped across the DMZ? What was it like, Mike Pompeo, to be there for that historic moment?
it was remarkable because we have an important mission with the North Korean government. We want to reduce risk to the world, to the United States, by denuclearizing North Korea. And for the president to have that chance to spend what ended up amounting to a significant amount of time with the North Korean leaders, and for me to spend time with my counterpart to talk about our shared objective there, that is the end state we were looking for and how we might get there and how we might make life better for every North Korean, was truly something to watch him step into North Korea after all of this time. We've got to get this right if we can achieve these objectives of denuclearizing in a way that we can verify, right, fully and completely.
Right.
This will be a truly historic accomplishment, and President Trump has set the conditions for this diplomacy to continue.
Well, look, I remember a very, very early lunch we had in the Trump administration, you and I in the Navy mess of the White House, where you convinced me that you understand who the president is, you understand what America First means, and you understand what American leadership can bring to the world. Explain to our listeners what unalienable rights are and what your new initiative is and how it fits into America's revitalized role in the world, Secretary Pompeo.
Sebastian, we came into office, this president, after 8 years of America having truly abandoned any sense that it was a strong and sovereign and understood that America's people were the first client for every Secretary of State, for every president, and how that fit into our efforts around the world. And so that rethinking, that new leadership on the world stage has multiple components, one of which is to make sure that we understand those things that are intrinsic to great nations. And so the commission that I've established goes back to our founders, where they talked about, not only did they talk about it in our Declaration of Independence, right? We talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But our founders wrote about these things in the Federalist Papers, and they knew that these core rights that are earned by every human being by the nature of their humanness was under assault. It was under assault because some wanted to reduce those rights and in other dimensions expand them and create a whole set of rights that risk diminishing these most fundamental ideas that have been at the very core of who America has been now for over two centuries.
What are the stakes right now in the Straits of Hormuz, recent incident with a British tanker, with a British frigate? What is involved and why does it matter to America and to regional as well as global security that the mullahs in Iran are taking actions that are destabilizing that region?
President Trump came in with enormous moral clarity with respect to the Islamic Republic of Iran. He understood very clearly that the agreement that had been reached by President Obama and Secretary Kerry was failing America. It presented the risk that Iran would have the capacity to get to a nuclear weapon in too short a time. And so we set about developing a strategy that would create stability there.
Life on Capitol Hill is incredibly intense and in many ways counterproductive. In the coming weeks, as the U.S. fiscal year approaches its close, you will hear more about a government shutdown. That is, in the eyes of Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, counterproductive, expensive, and unacceptable. He's doing something about that, and he and I spoke recently on the Hugh Hewitt Show. What does Prevent Government Shutdown Act do?
Well, I know it's a sneaky title, but it actually tries to just stop the whole thing of government shutdowns. Government shutdowns don't save us any money. We lose money and increase chaos in the system. So the simple idea is that if we get to the end of a fiscal year, that we have what's called an automatic continuing resolution. That means we keep spending exactly what we were spending the week before. So federal workers don't feel a government shutdown. American people don't feel it. But members of Congress and our staff and the Office of Management and Budget in the White House all lose travel privileges. So the basic thing is we stay in D.C. weekends, weekdays. There's a mandatory what's called quorum call every day in the House and the Senate. So we stay in continuous session until we actually get it resolved. So there is no leaving on a Codel. There is no leaving to go do a fundraiser. There is no leaving to go see your family on the weekend. We stay in session until it's done. It's no different than what most Americans done. If the job is not done, you can't leave. You keep working until the job is done. I think that creates a greater pressure to be able to finish it and take the pressure off the federal worker.
The people who are failing in that situation are the president and Article 1. I wouldn't urge this for the staff, but I wonder if maybe reductions in pay on accumulating basis for members of the Congress and the president, though it wouldn't matter to Mr. Trump, would be appropriate.
Well, see, that's the issue, what you said. The pay wouldn't matter to Mr. Trump. Obviously, he donates all of his pay every single time anyway. There's quite a few members of Congress that are multimillionaires that are not going to feel a difference in pay. The one universal commodity that's all precious to all of us is time. And so while some members would feel pay and many members would not here, It would be a very significant thing to say. We can move on to the next thing once we finish our constitutional responsibility on this thing, on the budgeting. That's something everybody feels the pressure on, and everybody would stay on focus to say, let's keep negotiating until we finish this.
All right, let me give you my two objections. One, and I'm not sure that they're not all overcome by better arguments. One is that occasionally you have to make a point. The shutdown, the first shutdown, Ted Cruz's shutdown, was to make the point and define the parties on Obamacare. The most recent one was to make the shutdown and make the point about a border fence. In both cases, Republicans lost, but in both cases, the Republicans drove home their message and defined their parties. Do we always want to take the dramatic step of shutdown off the table when it serves a long-term purpose of definition of the parties?
I think there are other ways to be able to define differences, and there are significant differences between the party when you deal with debt and deficit, national security issues, border security. There's very significant differences between the party, but I think you can do that without squandering the taxpayer dollar at the same time. Because when we're making that political point, we're also losing billions of dollars in taxpayer dollars, because a government shutdown causes a lot of chaos in every agency. Every agency has to set aside what they're doing, prepare actually instead for the shutdown, then do furloughs, all the chaos in those families. Then it's a tremendous cost to restart things again. That's a lot of money to be spent by the taxpayer so we can make a political point.
Continuing resolutions wreck military acquisition. Could you exempt the defense appropriations and require that to be passed so that the admirals and the government suppliers, contractors who are trying to build ships and deliver planes are not living on CRs?
I doubt it, because our Democratic colleagues would never agree to that. We have bipartisan support for this format. My goal is we would only have one of these probably every generation, because the members of Congress really are very attentive to our own time and the many obligations that we have. We have offices back in our state. We have responsibilities internationally with other things that we do. I'm on the state and foreign operations, and those that are in the Intel Committee, those that are on the armed services, those individuals all have responsibilities outside Washington, D.C. are pretty significant. Right now, every single year, we have a continuing resolution of some length. Sometimes those are months and months long, which is horrible for national defense. Sometimes they're very short. This is putting in a system that if we have a continuing resolution, I think it would be fairly short.
For my complete interview with Senator Lankford, visit townhallreview.com. Hey, thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Coming up.
I don't know that there's any thoroughly good news outlet anywhere left.
Big media's war on Trump, fully documented, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you are a conservative, you suspect that big media is not your friend, and you're right. If you don't believe me, Brent Bozell has a message for you. Brent Bozell is the founder and head of the D.C.-based Media Research Center, whose stated objective is to, quote, expose and neutralize the propaganda arm of the left, the national news media. Bozell has a new book out, Unmasked, Big Media's War Against Trump. He was recently a guest of Dennis Prager.
How did you keep the book down to 200 pages?
Tim Graham and I, Tim Graham being my co-author, and I discussed this, and we came to the conclusion that what we wanted to do was a fast read. But to do a fast read on this and to show the narrative rather than making it an academic exercise, we wanted this to be more of a narrative of the running story, because the importance of this book as opposed to the previous ones we've done on campaigns were that all of them were retrospectives. This one's prospective. This really brings you to the moment, and it is the prologue to what's going to happen in the next 16 months. If you thought that the last 6 years were bad, just wait till you see what happens between now and next November. CNN just last week and wrote did an hour-long documentary about the explosion of hatred in America, white supremacism, which doesn't exist except for this crazy
right.
4,000 people
that's
that
right.
live off
you know,
the
correct.
Oxygen. CNN is giving them
right.
all the oxygen
that's
they
right.
need, keeping them alive. And this and so what did they do? Within seconds, they tied it to Donald Trump.
Tell me, do you recall offhand the New York Times, I think Andrew Rosenthal, announcing even that it's time for journalists to throw off this mantle of objectivity? Am I right?
Yes, yeah. They have. And I will give him credit for one thing. He admitted it. I've done this for 32 years. And for about 29 of them, or 30 of them, I had to put up with reporters arguing that they were objective, that they were looking at the world in an objective, impartial manner, when in fact they weren't. They're no longer trying that. They're no longer even suggesting that. They are so weaponized, so radicalized, and on the front lines of all these things that they can't hide it anymore. They can't pretend otherwise. So they have just gone to the dark side of journalism. What you're reading is no longer the semblance of reality. It is the opinion of whoever is writing that piece.
This is a big deal, my friends. People ask me all the time, so what should I read? What is devoted to truth? Where should they go for understanding what's happening in America and the world?
You know, I don't know, Dennis, that there's any thoroughly good news outlet anywhere left. But in the entire scope of things, Fox is overwhelmingly opinion. And that's fine, but that's what it is. It's not news. Neither is CNN news or MSNBC news. Virtually, it's all opinion. It's crackpotty on the left. It's not liberalism. I do believe that the era of journalism is fast becoming a distant memory, but there are plenty of good sources on the right that are going to tell you the truth, and you've got to look for that information. You just simply cannot rely on one entity. What I'm saying is that the amount of news is limited on all networks.
Walking in back into the room earlier, I saw that the coverage was of Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate question in my mind was, why is this so widely being reported? And I am curious, do you think it deserves the amount of attention it is getting?
No, but I'll tell you, here's the difficulty. Back in 1995, I think it was, during the OJ trial, I was quite critical of CNN for having become the OJ network and surrendering the news or sacrificing the news in return. And CNN, to its credit, back in 1995, it did this sort of thing. It invited me on to critique itself. And so I did. When I finished, Tom Johnson, who was then the president of the network and a friend, was on the phone and wanted to talk to me. And he said, I just want to ask you to put yourself in my shoes. He said, last year, CNN lost 25% of its audience. This year, CNN's audience went up 400% when we became the OJ network.
Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
This is a regime with some of the worst human rights abuses.
More from Secretary of State Pompeo when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Earlier, I reported that the Department of State is on a mission. That mission is to re-engage with the message that America believes freedom is worth fighting for.
Not by invading other countries, however, but by demonstrating that a nation's success comes through diplomacy and respecting the rights of its citizens. In my recent talk with Secretary of State Pompeo, he spoke with a winning attitude and clarity on this topic. We began with a brief review of Iran's continuing belligerence.
It appears that Iran has seized the United Arab Emirates tanker. Do we know where it is, and will we help the UAE get it back?
So I can't say much about that, but we're following very closely what's taking place more broadly, even than just this tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. President's made pretty clear this is an international obligation to keep these waterways open, and we're working diligently to build out a maritime security initiative, a broad range of countries participating in that. The Iranians' effort to deny transit for commercial vessels, crude oil vessels, and other vessels is something that, frankly, it's consistent with 40 years of their history, and it's something that the United States is prepared to do our part to make sure that those waterways remain open.
Now, Congressman Gallagher told me earlier on the show that the UAE is known as Little Sparta. Would they do something without our cooperation?
You know, I hate to speculate. There's no doubt the Emirates will make the decisions that they believe is in their national interest, but they are a great partner. We work closely with them every day, not only in the region, but on matters around the world, and they, too, share our commitment to ensuring that Iran is not an abnormal nation, that it ceases its destabilizing activity there. And so we have a great partner in the United Arab Emirates.
All right, last Iran question. If they want a war, there's very little we can do to prevent that. At what point do you give up on Iran coming to the table? Ambassador Grinnell said the president always invites people to the table. I saw you yesterday on his right hand talking about bringing Iran to the table. Instead, they do. They seize tankers and they fly drones at Saudi Arabian airports. They're not coming to the table.
The American people should never underestimate the broad range of responses, nor should the Islamic Republic of Iran misunderstand our efforts. The best solution here is for the Iranians to decide that the diplomatic path forward is the best one for the people inside of Iran. And we try to talk to them because the Iranian regime has done things that are inconsistent with what the Iranian people want. But our mission set is to find a diplomatic path forward that denies Iran the capacity to be the world's largest state sponsor of terror. The president is prepared with a full range of responses so that we can get to the outcome that we're looking for.
Do some of those actions turning to the ministerial, and I want to, in fact, set up the ministerial. This is the second annual ministerial on religious freedom. I believe it is the first time that we've had back-to-back annual ministerials on any subject. You picked the most important one. In the classic statement of rights, there are religious rights, social rights, and economic rights. The social rights, including political rights. And the religious rights really come before anything else because it's the consequence of which you achieve meaning in your life. Does Iran suppress religious rights?
Every day. This is a regime with some of the worst human rights abuses of any country in the world on a consistent basis every day.
Now, we have 114 countries gathered at the State Department. There are 1,000 representatives from around the globe here. So yesterday, I think you ran down victims of religious intolerance, and it was a wide variety of people who have suffered greatly across the world, from New Zealand, from Sri Lanka, from San Diego. What was the impact of these speakers? And they're all different religions, have all been persecuted in different places.
It's truly remarkable 3 days here at the State Department. No previous administration has prepared to defend this most basic freedom. You talked about that, Hugh. Absent having the capacity to believe what you want and to act in accordance with your own conscience, all of the other things that we talk about as freedoms or rights are subservient to this. So very important that we advocate on behalf of this. Some 80% of the people in the world today live in religiously restricted environments. And so we brought in a group of people yesterday from a broad set of religious backgrounds who have lived in these spaces and who are working tirelessly to help their countries improve on religious freedom in their nation.
Now, it seems to me that it's a very difficult order. But if you could persuade your counterparts in the PRC and Russia that religious freedom practiced by all but the extremes of any faith, and every faith has extremes and they cannot be allowed to define the religion for which they appear to speak, but religious liberty is actually a stabilizing force in any country that embraces genuine broad spectrum religious liberty. Have you made that argument to President Xi or to others who routinely try and control the house church in China, the Catholic Church in China, any other Protestant denomination? Do you get a sense that they actually listen to this argument?
It's a good question. We've certainly made this argument not only to the Chinese, but to every country that's not living up to their obligations for their citizens to give them the religious freedom that they have by right of their humanness. Nations become stronger when they permit their citizens to exercise their core beliefs about who they really are. And we make that case to each country about why this is not something that's just intrinsically good, but also good for them in terms of their capacity to build out their country, to grow the economy in their nation, to keep their country secure and safe. This central premise of religious freedom makes countries stronger.
Let's turn specifically to China for a moment. Can you tell us what it is that's going on there? Eli Lake has a story saying that China's campaign against the Uyghurs demands a response. What do you think, Mr. Secretary?
So this administration has responded to this threat to the world in ways that no administration has chosen to do. We've taken it on. We've been very candid about our view. You have some million Uyghur Muslims. There are Kazakhs. There are others there as well that are being detained and put in facilities, camps inside of Xinjiang that the whole world, when they see it, will be repulsed by. Our mission set is to respond. We have lots of issues that we're dealing with respect to our relationship with China, but to respond in an appropriate way, which always begins you with calling it out, with identifying it for what it is, and appealing to people all over the world to respond in the most fundamental way to say this is unacceptable and demand that there be a change in behavior. Other responses, how we might get this to change. I don't want to get out in front of the president, but know that President Trump and the administration take this central core idea of religious liberty as a very important priority for the State Department and indeed all of our government. And we tell countries around the world this. It is the exact opposite of what America is doing today here at the Department of State with our religious freedom ministerial. We've got people here who disagree with us on policy. We've got people here who have faiths that are very different than mine as a Christian evangelical. But they're all here because this mission set, this first freedom, is so central to success for every country and, importantly, to give every individual the rights that they deserve. And what you're seeing take place there in China is precisely the opposite of that.
For my complete interview with Secretary Pompeo, go to townhallreview.com. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Coming up.
Everybody wants to dive in and say, look at the dirty bad guy. Look at the racist.
A responsible action backfires. In the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, a Democratic congresswoman is in hot water again.
She is incompetent. She doesn't tell the truth.
Socialism goes under the microscope.
Under socialism, your only incentive is to curry favor with the government regulators. You don't have to concern yourselves with customers.
A California bill threatens those who help people struggling with sexuality.
This bill would silence religious workers from speaking negatively about homosexual behavior and activity.
And a shocking report before the United States Senate.
In 2016, Google's search algorithm likely impacted undecided voters in a way that shifted at least 2.6 million votes to Hillary Clinton.
To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Folks who live in cities are often compelled by their workplaces or homeowner associations to inquire when something appears suspicious. Or maybe that's the way it used to be done. Recently, a YouTube executive in San Francisco found this to be so. Here's my colleague, Mike Gallagher.
You know, the media loves a bad guy. One of the bad guys recently is a white YouTube executive in San Francisco. And the narrative is a black guy got the cops called on him just because he's black. And of course, that's not the story. And even smart people don't know all the facts. And make no mistake, let's start with this. No one should excuse somebody being, interrogated because they're black or the police called on them simply because they're black. But I would submit that in most cases, that doesn't happen. again, hear me. I'm sure it does. Racism exists. There are bad people who do racist things. There's no question. But I was talking to this friend of mine this morning. He said, isn't that terrible? Black guy was just waiting for a friend. That's all he was doing. Well, that wasn't what he was doing. He walked into the locked apartment building behind somebody who was legitimately given access, and the guy didn't have legitimate access into the lobby of the apartment building. Anybody who's ever lived in an apartment building knows the process is called tailgating, and every leasing company, every homeowners association, every management firm tells you not to let people do that. The black guy walked in behind somebody who had opened the locked front door, and the resident, the white YouTube executive with his little screaming, crying kid, wanted to know what the guy was doing and who he was seeing, and said, do you mind calling them on the call box? And the black guy immediately whipped out his phone and he said, I'm going to put you on TV. You're a racist. Start cursing the guy out. And was very angry and confrontational, and the guy called the police. Now, hell has rained down on the white guy because he's being shamed and blamed and accused of being a dirty, rotten racist. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that a YouTube executive living in the heart of San Francisco probably isn't a right-winger or a conservative or a registered Republican. But see, it doesn't matter because everybody wants a bad guy. Everybody wants to dive in and say, look at the dirty bad guy. Look at the racist.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. If you liked our program, tell a friend to sign up for the podcast. Start at townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.